last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC, and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward-thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles,
IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next bazaar.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio. with Sheikh Danesh.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today's episode begins with a question. Why was Prophet Ibrahim, or Abraham, called Khalilullah in the Quran, the intimate friend of Allah, of God? Many think it's about love, and yes, love is part of it, but there is a deeper layer shared by Imam Askari alayhi salam as he interprets the Prophet's words. Khalil comes not just from love, he says, but from khilla. You know, love is khulla, and he says, but also from khilla, which means poverty and complete dependence. Ibrahim alayhi salam was poor to God alone. He was disconnected from all else and content with only God. So this is what the Imam alayhi salam says, which is very insightful. Let's dive into it. Imagine it. Ibrahim alayhi salam has been condemned to death by fire. He's tied to a catapult, flying through the air toward a blazing pit. God sends Jibreel to offer help. He says, "Ask me anything. I've been sent to save you." And Ibrahim replied, "God is enough for me and the best to rely on. I ask of no one but him." Look, compare this to ourselves, what we do, what we think in our daily lives. This moment is the birth of khilla, not weakness, not despair, but radical independence from creation and total dependence on the Creator. That's what made him a friend of God, because he had no other hope but him. Let's turn to psychology. Studies in resilience and trauma recovery show something fascinating. People who survive extreme hardship, war, disease, injustice, and still thrive often share one trait: secure inner anchoring, a sense there is a higher purpose, a bigger presence, something constant in a chaotic world. This is what spiritual psychologists call transcendent trust. Transcendent trust. It's not passivity, it's active surrender. It brings peace not by fixing everything, but by freeing us from needing to control everything. Just like Ibrahim alayhi salam in the air, you might be flying into fire in your own life, but if your soul is tied to God, the fire won't burn you. Your trust becomes your shield. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danesh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio. Glad you could join us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. The word Bismillah appears 114 times in the Quran. It occurs twice in Surah Naml, whereas Surah Tawbah is the only surah which doesn't begin with Bismillah. Quran believes in life after death. The Quran teaches us that besides having a body, a human being also has a spirit, a soul, and when a person dies, the physical body vanishes while the soul remains. We start this hour's programs with our radio productions feature. After that, we have Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and far. They will be followed by Let's Recite the Holy Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Holy Quran at level 2. Stay with us for the next hour. Iran.
Sistan and Balochistan is populated by over 9,000 villages. The village of Ghalanor dates back to the Qajar period, and since this area isn't prone to earthquakes, these adobe houses have managed to survive for about 150 years. Isn't that amazing?
About 40 kilometers from the city of Zabul, this village was originally built on top of a hill and witnessed the migration of the villages of Old Fort. In fact, that's where it gets its name, Ghalanor, which means new fort. Ghalanor was built on high ground to protect its occupants from flood, since the varying amount of the flowing water of the Hamul River has always caused different problems for the people living in the Sistan Basin. But that's not the only thing the architects of this village had up their sleeves. During the Qajar period in the 18th and 19th centuries, different regions were managed by overlords or khans. The most eye-catching structure here is the two-story adobe castle of the Khan of the region. It was built at the entrance of the village and around a small hill, so the top of the hill is the floor of the second story. The village is currently being restored and is going to be turned into an eco-tourism village. Two kilometers from Ghalanor lies a mysterious and ancient city referred to over the past 200 to 300 years as Dahane-i-Ghulaman, or Gateway of the Slaves. Dahane-i-Ghulaman is the largest Achaemenian site in the entire eastern section of Iran that has been dated back to between the 4th and the 6th century BC. More importantly, it's the only Achaemenid site that may hold within its depths the secrets of the lifestyle of the ordinary people living at that time. Built in the wilderness, away from the imperial capital, even with the alignment of buildings roughly in a straight line, running southwest to northeast along the edge of water supplies, the site was only inhabited for a brief period of a century or a century and a half, and was abandoned as a result of natural forces that have always determined the survival and migration of urban settlements in the arid region of Sistan.
This entire site was covered by sand. After it was dug up about 50 years ago in the 1960s, the layout of this ancient city was studied extensively by archaeologists from around the world. And it seems that they all came to a similar conclusion. The precise architecture and great harmony in the design of Dahane-i-Ghulaman suggest that it was built with urban planning in mind about 2,500 years ago.
Geometric studies on this site have revealed 27 major structures and an additional 23 buildings, most of which have not yet been unearthed. It was believed that the Achaemenids used architectural plans only in the construction of palaces and important buildings, such as the royal residences of Pasargadae, Persepolis, Susa, as well as Dasht-e Gohar. But it seems that the people of Dahani, Ghulaman, even prepared an architectural plan for the construction of their alleys and ordinary houses. The urban planning, the architecture, the temple, the location and size of what remains of this ancient city have led scholars to believe that it was a satrapal capital or something very similar to it in character. Studies into the origins of the hearths, fireplaces and altars have tried to reveal their purpose since they have a unique architecture. Were they used for animal sacrifices, since animal blood was found on the altars? What kind of rituals were performed here? All these studies have tried to find answers to the many questions that arose 40 years ago with the unearthing of the site and have never been completely answered, even to this day. Standing atop the nearby hill that gives you an overview of the site, you can see lakes filled with a considerable amount of water around it. The Chaimima reservoirs in the south of Zabul are three big lakes that are the second most important water storage reservoirs in the region. The water stored in these big lakes is used to irrigate the Sistan Plain and to provide drinking water for the cities of Zabul and Zahedan. Trees were planted all around the lakes by the University of Zabul to prevent dust from falling into the water. This is Golnar Farnoudi for Iran. As we continued our tour of Arras in northwest Iran, in the remote areas of the region, I found the opportunity to learn more about its history and its folklore. It is interesting to see how villagers in these remote mountains have managed to keep all their traditions alive, traditions that go beyond simple eating habits.
Games are an inseparable part of human culture. That's why as you study any ancient civilization, you will definitely find some very old games.
The village of Gulfaraj had its own museum of anthropology, where I could find plenty of interesting information about the people that have been living here for thousands of years, including information about the local games that they played.
About games, most of us imagine a group of kids playing, but there are many games that even grown-ups can enjoy.
A game that is surprisingly reminiscent of baseball, making me wonder if this American sport actually originates in Iran. But anyhow, this game definitely encourages teamwork and requires a very fit body and healthy lungs. And as you can see, it is very popular among grown-ups. Even the elderly. Playing with knuckle bones, especially those of a sheep, is one of the oldest games that many ancient civilizations have in common. However, there are many different ways of using them. Most of the games are played by throwing them up and catching them in different manners. Again, another popular game among grown-ups as well as kids.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, the dusty alleys of the village never seem to be quiet after school. The games are simple. You don't need anything special. A ball made of leftover bits and pieces of cloth and a few stones. Even a couple of pebbles are enough to keep the kids busy. And if everything else fails, there's always a song they can sing together.
Bandadusha is a popular game played by kids. It literally means capturing the violet, but I really don't know how it's played, which is why I'm joining them.
From what I learned, solidarity is the name of the game. One side loses when its human chain is broken by a member of the opposing team. And although they didn't use a sheep today, they still learned problem-solving skills and creativity. Yusumisha Ahmadi for Iran.
Cause you mean everything. Hear you talking when you're sleeping. Reality, know you're going through hardship. And I know that you're scared, but you don't need to worry. Cause Allah is there. Ooh, oh, I will never let you go. You're my heart, my love, my soul. And the choices that we make, we gotta make our own. Gonna stand on our feet. Take this direction. When we take on the world, all the diamonds and pearls couldn't take me away from your smile and your love. And I know you feel lost and you wanna give up. After every hardship comes ease. Hardship comes ease. May Allah bless our way and our intention. Stay pure. Open the gates to heaven.
hardship comes ease.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Sudan has condemned the latest Israeli attack on the Qatari capital, Doha, calling it a blatant act of aggression. At the Arab Islamic Emergency Summit hosted by Doha on Monday, Sudan's Sovereignty Council Chairman, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, described the strikes as a violation of international law and a direct threat to regional security. Sudan declared full solidarity with Qatar, its leadership, government, and people, urging decisive Arab Islamic and international action to confront Israeli aggression.
Qatar has always stood firmly with Sudan and liberation movements across the Arab and Islamic world, especially Palestine. Al-Burhan's visit shows Sudan's clear support for Qatar against aggression. These attacks proved one thing: America is no ally, and Qatar is not standing alone.
Back in Khartoum, the mood reflects widespread support for Qatar, denouncing Israel's repeated attacks on civilians and critical infrastructure. The public rejects these acts of aggression and occupation, calling for accountability, justice, and a halt to violence.
We welcome Al-Burhan's visit to Qatar and strongly condemn the Israeli aggression against our brotherly state. We call on all Arab and regional nations to stand in solidarity with Qatar.
The Sudanese people affirm their full support for Qatar. We denounce Israel's aggression and extend appreciation to Al-Burhan and the government for responding to Qatar's invitation.
The Doha Emergency Summit concluded with a united front from Arab and Islamic states condemning Israeli aggression, which they said threatens global security. They also called for an end to the impunity Israel enjoys, emphasized the importance of upholding international law and supporting Palestinian rights. Israel struck a Doha residence last Tuesday where Palestinian negotiators were discussing a peace proposal for Gaza.
From Khartoum to Doha, Sudan's people and leaders unite with Qatar against the Israeli aggression. Their call is urgent: peace, protection, and justice for all civilians. Abdullah Hussein, Khartoum.
India's Supreme Court has struck down key provisions of a controversial new law that changes how properties donated by Muslims are owned and managed. The ruling follows intense debates and protests led by Muslims and opposition groups, arguing that the law infringes on Muslims' rights. They have welcomed the verdict, but say it is not enough.
I was expecting the court to stay the entire law, yet it's a good progress that it limited the powers the new law had granted in determining the status of donated property. We will continue our struggle for rights through legal ways.
The government says the new law called the Waqf Amendment Act 2025 makes managing Muslim-donated properties more transparent. Critics reject that. They say the law is a part of a broader political agenda by the ruling BJP party to marginalize Muslims.
There is a very high likelihood that the BJP will ensure that all Waqf properties are weakened. They will be rewarding encroachers. The result will be that the encroacher will become the owner of that property despite not having the title, because the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, decided that the limitation has to apply.
In Islam, a waqf refers to a charitable endowment made by people for the welfare of society. For India's Muslims, these assets hold great significance. That's because they support mosques, schools, cemeteries, and orphanages, and cannot be diverted for other purposes. Traditionally, their management has been regulated under the Waqf Act of 1995. However, in April, the government introduced amendments to the act, changing the process of managing Waqf properties.
Muslim groups allege the ruling party and its affiliates have promoted anti-Islamic policies since 2014, including communal violence, vigilantism, and demolition of Muslim-owned properties. They allege of being systematically oppressed through legislation such as the Waqf Bill, to deprive Muslims of their donated land and to snatch their property rights under the Indian Constitution.
Activists claim India's Muslims face increasing intimidation under BJP policies that foster bias against minorities. The government denies this, insisting India is a democracy that guarantees equality for all. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
On Tuesday, some 5,000 people took to the streets of the Italian capital, Rome, to hold a rally in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians in the aftermath of Israel's ground invasion of Gaza City. The initiative was called by a string of pro-Palestine groups, including the Palestinian Democratic Arab Union, the Palestinian Youth Movement, and the Italian-Palestinian Association. The rally was largely attended by high school and university students who chanted slogans such as "We are all anti-Zionists" and "Long live the Intifada."
No agli accordi.
We say no to any form of military, commercial and diplomatic engagement with a terrorist state which has been carrying out a genocide for 2 years, which has killed more than 20,000 children, over 60,000 people, and which has bombarded many West Asian countries. We must boycott terrorist Israel.
It's very refreshing, and it gives hope to see that the young people are starting to be aware of what's going around and to really express what they think, because at the end of the day, it's the young, the new generation that is going to change the world.
People at the rally were bemused as to how Western countries haven't yet been able to impose sanctions on the Israeli regime after an endless list of war crimes committed in Gaza and in the West Bank since October 7, 2023.
On Tuesday, even Italy's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani said that Rome was opposed to Israel's offensive to take control of Gaza City, a statement that arrives in the context of almost 2 years of unconditional support from Italy for the regime by providing weapons, military training and logistics.
Ha rappresentato una retorica di facciata.
It's Italy's usual rhetorical statements. There is no concrete actions put in place so that some real pressure is applied on Israel with the goal to stop the occupation and the onslaught of Palestinians, which began long before October 7, 2023.
Two new large pro-Palestine demonstrations are slated to take place on September 22nd, when high school students will stage a nationwide day of strike against the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza, and on October 4 in Rome. Max Civili, Rome.
After a three-year hiatus, the wheels of economic diplomacy are turning again between Iran and Pakistan. High-ranking delegations from both countries gathered in Tehran for the 22nd Joint Economic Commission, a two-day summit focused on deepening bilateral ties. Talks are co-chaired by Iran's Minister of Roads and Urban Development and Pakistan's Minister of Commerce and Trade. The Commission is addressing areas ranging from trade and investment to transportation, energy, and even environmental issues.
We can say we have a common ground for joint activities in regard to facing the challenges, upcoming challenges, existing challenges of climate change, and also we can exchange experiences on what the two nations have done for managing their protected areas, their wildlife. And happily, we have a document that is going to be signed during this joint commission. And definitely, it will be a step toward expanding our collaboration.
Discussions also cover the establishment of free trade zones and cross-border markets aimed at facilitating smoother transactions and boosting economic activity in border regions. Both sides see these initiatives as essential for regional stability and growth.
Iran and Pakistan's trade currently exceeds $3 billion, with Iran exporting $2.4 billion worth of goods to Pakistan in 2024. Both countries now aim to raise bilateral trade to $10 billion. Achieving this target will require adjustments in banking systems, easing trade regulations, and developing roads and infrastructure on both sides. Authorities from Tehran and Islamabad will work together to draw a roadmap to reach this goal.
This commission marks a turning point for Iran-Pakistan relations, with both sides seeking to overcome past challenges and create lasting economic partnerships.
As Tehran and Islamabad revive their joint economic dialogue, both sides are now aiming for a roadmap to boost bilateral trade to the $10 billion horizon. Yusumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The main topic on the agenda of this year's conference is the June attacks on Iranian nuclear facilities and ongoing threats by the U.S. and Israel to nuclear security in West Asia.
International peace and security are indeed at risk. And we have seen this throughout history in particular, but not only in the Middle East and dramatically last June in Iran when its nuclear facilities were attacked. Together with His Excellency Dr. Araghchi, we signed an agreement summarizing the technical measures, the practical steps that we need to do to resume this indispensable work.
The General Conference started with the election of Iran as one of the eight vice presidents with the support of the Middle East and South Asia group.
I would like to thank the majority of the members of the IAEA in this conference trusted Iran to be as one of the vice presidents of the conference, and especially I would like to thank our group, Meza Group, which entrusted Iran as a candidate.
Iran tabled a motion prohibiting any attack on nuclear facilities on Monday evening. The resolution is co-sponsored by Russia and China and will be debated on Thursday afternoon.
We ask countries to participate and vote to this resolution, because if they don't support our suggestion, it means that they are supporting jungle law in the world. So it is better to condemn U.S. and Israel and prevent further action as happened for us.
The Iranian resolution on the prohibition of attacks on nuclear facilities is based on common principles of the IAEA, such as the previous IAEA resolutions 533, 444, and the UN Security Council resolution 487.
Iran has put forward a draft resolution aimed at serving the international community. This draft resolution is firmly grounded in the perception of the mandate of the IAEA in full compliance with the statute and in adherence to the fundamental principles of international law and the Charter of the United Nations.
Islami also held bilateral meetings with the delegations of Russia, Venezuela and China.
This hall is divided between those who contend attacks and threats on nuclear facilities and those who are joining the US, Israel and the E3 in their attempts to undermine the IAEA statute. But it's expected that most countries will support the Iranian resolution on Thursday. Dieter Reinisch from UN headquarters in Vienna.
For decades, the so-called two-state solution to the Israel-Palestine question has dominated Western diplomacy, enshrined in the controversial Oslo Accords of the early 1990s. 30 years on, many here say that solution was dead on arrival.
It's impossible now, in any event, even if it was desirable, which I don't think it ever was, to actually create a two-state proposition, because the West Bank, for example, has been completely atomized by the Zionist entity. So I think we need to rip that idea up and to start again. And what we're campaigning for is a one-state solution.
Critics of the two-state solution, now pushed for by Saudi Arabia and France at the United Nations, also pointed to Israel's ongoing genocidal assault on Gaza.
What they are actually doing is consolidating the gains made by the Zionist entity, which includes the absolute annihilation of Gaza, the continued terrorism that is being taken place by Israeli settlers in the West Bank. And what they actually want to do is consolidate the 80-odd years of Zionist settler colonialism.
The debate, organized by activist independent movement, grew heated, with some arguing for a state, including all Palestinians and those who live in what's now called Israel, if they wish to stay.
Every Palestinian should have the right to return. And Israelis who decide they want to stay will have obligation to assist the Palestinians to settle back to their home, and that means everywhere.
Opponents of that view argue it resembles South Africa after the end of apartheid, when many of the immigrant white population got to stay.
The concept of, you know, what is mine and what is yours is so simple, and actually people are trying to pretend there's shades of grey. No, actually it's very black and white. There's Palestine, and there's a fake terrorist construct called Israel that needs to be dismantled.
Dr. Ali also suggests that armed struggle by Palestinians is the only pathway to one state being materialized.
Armed struggle is legal under international law. And rather than, you know, and what we should be doing is arguing for deprescription of perfectly legitimate legal organizations under international law, we should be never condemning resistance.
At the end of the debate, it was obvious which motion received more support.
With the Israeli regime openly rejecting Palestinian statehood as it commits genocide in Gaza, the debate here mirrors a wider global reckoning. The two-state solution has repeatedly failed. The consensus here, a one-state solution with equal rights for all the indigenous inhabitants of historical Palestine. Saipur is up from Birmingham, United Kingdom.
This Friday, the quartet comprising the U.S., Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Egypt issued a joint statement declaring that Sudan's war has created the world's worst humanitarian crisis and threatens regional peace and security. The group called for a three-month humanitarian truce, unrestricted aid access, and a clear transition process towards civilian-led governance within 9 months. By Saturday, Sudan's government delivered its response. While stressing it welcomes genuine efforts to ease the conflict, the government underlined that no initiative will succeed unless it respects Sudan's sovereignty and the legitimacy of its national institutions. The statement also rejected attempts to place the state on equal footing with the militia, emphasizing that Sudan alone has the right to shape its political path during the transitional period.
The Quartet's statement have no legal or international legitimacy. They were formed to impose guardianship on Sudan. The UAE fueled and funded this war. Everyone knows who arms the RSF. These resolutions are worthless, equating the army with the militia, and each time the army advances, the Quartet rushes to rescue the UAE's spoiled child.
Khartoum also noted that international actors have struggled to enforce previous UN Security Council resolutions, including those on the siege of Al-Fashir. While the Quartet is pushing for a new roadmap, analysts point out that earlier efforts failed to deliver lasting results, leaving questions about whether this latest initiative will move beyond the statement of intent.
From Khartoum, it's clear the government is drawing a firm line, welcoming any support to end the war, but rejecting what it sees as outside interference that undermines Sudan's sovereignty. Abdullah Hussein, Khartoum.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Let's recite the Quran.
وإذا قرأت القرآن جعلنا بينك وبين الذين لا يؤمنون بالآخرة حجابا مستورا.
القرآن نور وبيان. القرآن هدي الإيمان. القرآن مسك الختام. قرآن عليك سلام
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners listening to IRB English Radio right now. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran and Kareem. Inshallah, today we will be practicing verse number 19 and 20. Two verses from Surah Al-Ra'd on page 252. Top of the page, right?
Yes.
So brothers and sisters, hope you have the Quran with you. Please turn to page 252, top of the page, Surah Al-Ra'd, verse number 19 and 20, right?
Yes.
Ready to listen to a beautiful recitation.
Let's go with this one.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Afaman ya'lamu annama unzila ilayka min rabbika al-haqqu kaman huwa a'ma innama yatadhakkaru
Then is he who knows that what has been revealed to you from your Lord is the truth, like one who is blind? They will only be reminded who are a people of understanding.
الَّذِينَ يُوفُونَ بِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ وَلَا يَنْقُضُونَ الْمِيثَاقَ
Those who fulfill the covenant of Allah and do not break the contract.
Nice recitation, mashallah. Mashallah. Thanks, Masoom, for your recommendation. That was nice. Thanks, Masoom, for your suggestion. That was very good. I enjoyed it. So, Surah Al-Ra'd, page 252, top of the page, verse number 19. Let's see what Allah Almighty says first in this ayah, then inshallah talk about the next ayah. Too many good points are here, okay? I really want you to refer to the Tafsir books, inshallah, to learn all of them. Because we don't have much time. We just mentioned two, 3 points just to have learned something from these two verses. Okay. Verse number 19. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Allah Almighty says أفمن يعلم becomes أفمن يعلم أفمن يعلم أنما أنزل إليك من ربك الحق كمن هو أعمى Is someone who knows, this is a question, is someone who knows that what has been sent down to you from your Lord is the truth, is this person like someone who is blind? No. All right? No. Of course, the one who knows, the one who has faith, the one who believes, the one who knows, the one who understands, is what? Not comparable to the one who is blind. Now, in this one does not mean he is blind, like his two eyes are blind. Okay, he can't see with his two eyes. No, his heart, his soul is blind. Understood? So next, إِنَّمَا يَتَذَكَّرُ أُولُو الْأَلْبَابِ إِنَّمَا يَتَذَكَّرُ أُولُو الْأَلْبَابِ Only those who possess intellect take admonition. They understand. They are the reminding people. Okay? So guys, it means that some people are there, they disbelieve in Quran. They do not accept the Quran. They do not accept Prophet. They do not accept Islam. They do not accept Allah. They do not, these kind of things. So the reason is clear. The reason is very clear. First and foremost, they don't let themselves understand. They don't let themselves understand, okay? And if they want, because we have free will, if they want, they can go and learn about it. Just go learn about it. Finally, you either stay the same person or you will get changed. If that makes sense, you will become a believer. If that doesn't make sense to you, so continue being a disbeliever. Stay on your path, okay? But there is no one in the world, you can't find anyone who should be seeing, who should be knowing and seeing the reasons, the proofs, okay, and not believing. If you can find it, tell me. Except those who are doing it on purpose. Except those who are doing it on purpose, and they're deceiving themselves. All right? Yeah. But the proofs and reasons that the Quran brings us and gives us about the existence of God, about the existence of Day of Judgment, and whatever, okay? They all are understandable. They all make clear sense. So, Masoom, would you please recite the first ayah once?
Yes.
Yeah, let's listen, everyone.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أفمن يعلم أنما أنزل إليك من ربك الحق كمن هو أعمى
أحسنتم أفمن يعلم حسن how do I read this أفمن يعلم I merge them So the ya is doubled, noon is omitted. So meme is joined to the ya. Afa man no may. This is called qa'idatul idgham, right? Afa may. You extend the sound as well. Not afa may ya'lam. No. Afa may. Extend the sound. Yeah, and also nasal sound. Afa may. See? أَفَمَنْ يَعْلَمُ أَنَّمَا أُنْزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ الْحَقُّ So, أَنَّمَا نُون carries a shadda. Whenever نُون carries a shadda, ميم carries a shadda, these two letters should be pronounced with a nasal
sound.
Plus
extension.
An extension for two beats. Annama, don't say annama, annama, no, not fast. Annama, a little stretch it, okay?
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Unzila, unzila, noon saakin. And wait, annama has got a mad. Is that mad wajib?
No.
No, it's jais. You can extend it or you can skip it. أَنَّمَا أُنزِلَ Actually, mad is for extension. But when we say it's jais, it means it's jais to ignore it. Skip it, not extend it. أَنَّمَا أُنزِلَ You hide the sound of noon here. قَعِدَةُ الْإِخْفَى أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ How do you say that?
مِنْ رَبِّكَ
مِنْ رَبِّكَ قَعِدَةُ الْإِدْغَامِ مِنْ رَبِّكَ الْحَقُّ كَمَنْ هُوَ أَعْمَى What does that jim tell us, Hassan? Tell us, come on.
Jim allows us to make a pause.
Allows you to make a pause. If you're running out of breath, you're allowed to make a pause. All right?
Yes.
Next part, move on. Innama nun mushaddad, remember it.
Innama yatadhakkaru ulul albab.
Ahsandam. Do you see that? Wow, after the ulul. Ulu, word ulu. You ignore that well. You don't read it. You don't say ulul albab innama yatadhakkaru ulul albab. No. Innama yatadhakkaru ulul albab. Not do not extend it. Ulul albab. You ignore the waw. This is an exception. Ulu, ulaika, ula, and it's gone. These words are exception, yes? Uli,
yes.
For example. Next ayah, Hassan, would you read that one, please?
Yes.
Oh, wait. Ulul albab. When you stop, the letter ba changes, ba mutaharrik changes to a sakin ba. It has a sukun sign there. Albab. So you echo the sound. This
yes.
is called qal.
Qal.
Qal. Qal. Mashallah. Alladhina.
الذين يوفون بعهد الله ولا ينقضون ميثاق.
Wait, good, good. But listen,